brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And during the holiday season, you think about giving gifts. Well, why not give yourself a gift? How about a Disney vacation? And who do you go see for that? Well, Santa's helpers at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They'll do their best to get you the best for your vacation dollar. So give them a try. Go visit them at MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner at MickeyMilesPodcast.com.
This is Anita from Virginia, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 128 of Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today, and with me on the show is my co-host, Michelle Scribner-McLean, who recently was taking part in more training for this thing called Dopey that's going to happen in January. And Michelle, what did you do? Maybe everyone would like to know what your training was this past week.
Well, I'm, you know, as I've mentioned before, I'm working with Jeff Galloway, and this week was a 4 day in a row training. So I did 2.5 one day. The next day I did 5. The next day was 10. And then it was 24. So, our good buddy Charlie Gessner actually drove 2 hours to run 16 of the 24 with me. So I am indebted, because anybody who has trained for those distances knows that it can get pretty lonely when there isn't, or there aren't characters every mile, and music and bands and castles to run through and stuff like that. So, but you know, Mike, the really cool thing is, I know we have veteran runners on our podcast with us tonight who have run a lot of long distances. But for me, this was it gave me the confidence that I can do the Dopey now. I really feel like I can do it because I was able to tackle these and with minimal discomfort. I feel really, really good. So it's good news. Training is there for a reason.
I think that's part of Jeff's objective, is to build his people's confidence, and that's why he has you doing such crazy distances every once in a while.
Well, it's mental and it's also physical too. So
we're doing questions tonight, and Michelle and I need help, so we've asked Helen Dunn to come back and Matt Marcella to come back. Welcome back, Helen and Matt. Matt, of course, is from the team hashtag Run Disney Facebook page, and Helen Dunn is from Team All Ears. Welcome back. Welcome back, guys.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you ready to tackle some questions?
Okay.
Yes.
Keep on hearing
it, Matt.
I keep on hearing the David Letterman song, Letters, We Get Letters. All right, I'm going to do the first one, and it is from Adam Britton. And he says, recently discovered your podcast while preparing for the recent Wine and Dine Half, which was my first Run Disney event, and I'm now hooked on both Run Disney and your show. You're among friends, Adam. I didn't submit a proof of time for the last race, and I honestly didn't like having to wait so long for my corral to start, especially since we had to be at the pre-race holding area even earlier. My finish time qualifies me for an earlier corral next year, but I'd like to move up even more. All of the pace requirements I see, though, appear to be for half marathon finish time, but the Run Disney site says you can submit a 10K as proof of time. I want to run a local 10K in order to move up in the corrals, but I'm not sure how this will translate. Am I safe to assume that I could take my 10K pace and adjust it to a half marathon in order to predict what corral I'll be placed in? If not, is there any info that you have on how Disney accepts the 10K time versus the half marathon time? Thanks, and keep up the good work. So I am going to ask Matt if he can help us out with this one. Matt, what do you think?
Ooh, I have to break out the calculator for this one. Disney uses a formula when they determine your pace, and it is true that you can use a 10K pace time for their half marathons. I think the way it works is they take your 10K pace and essentially stretch it to what a half marathon pace would be. There is a formula for doing that. I'm not sure off the top of my head what that is. But they'll also take into account what your predicted half marathon finish time is. And if your 10K pace falls within that predicted half marathon finish time, that's how they determine which corral you'll be in.
Anybody else want to chime in?
Yeah, I think Matt's right. I think there's a formula that they use, and I think they would take – so, for instance, I think if they take, let's say, a 10K pace of 10 minutes per mile, I don't think that they project that you would do the exact same pace for the half, but I think they use a formula where it's somewhere between 85 and 95% of that. So – let me change that. They possibly, I think that the formula adds 5 to 15% more time. So it would be, obviously it would be more than 10. I'm not sure if I agree with them doing that. I think they should not use a 10K. I think they should use a half marathon, maybe a 15K. Maybe I think a 15K would be more credible than a 10K. Michelle?
I'm going to disagree a little bit because I've actually submitted a 10K time, so I don't want to be a hypocrite. But in all honesty, I think that there's a big difference between somebody who's run zero races and somebody who's done a successful 10K. So I think rather than being in the last corral, maybe they deserve to be moved up. And if they do it at a very fast pace, then I think there's an argument that if you do a 6 mile at a certain pace, that you can project out that a half marathon would be. Maybe not at the same pace, but.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's different. I know I'm one of those people who, it doesn't matter what I do these days, it's the same pace. But there are others who will just run faster with the shorter distances. Michelle, why don't you add some more to this?
Well, I was going to say, Matt, what you need to do is to I actually just did this for the marathon. You submit the link to Cool Running, when you get your race time for your 10K, you're going to email that to Run Disney and just say, I'm doing this to get moved up in the corrals. And they will place you where you need to be placed. So it's pretty easy to do, and they're very, they write back pretty quickly.
Our second question comes from John Maloney of Palmyra, Pennsylvania. And John says, hi, Mike and Michelle. I'm curious about what it's like to drive to Epcot on the morning of the half and full marathons in January. Are there any roads around Epcot to avoid? And do you know if one needs to arrive at the lot by a certain time? Thanks for all your help with training and race preparation through the podcast.
Mike, I know we have guests, but this question is made for you to answer.
I've been doing races down there for almost 10 years, and I try to be like one of the first people in the lot. But there are race final instructions that everyone receives, and my suggestion is to read those race instructions, final instructions, and abide by them. And what I want to add to that, John, is that you want to be one of the first ones there, because historically over the last year, things have been really kind of crazy with Disney races, with all the participants. So what I have done in the past is I'm usually at Epcot by about 3 o'clock, 3:30 the latest, and they want people in the gathering area by around 4, and right around maybe 4:30, quarter of 5. Again, it changes every year. They will start calling people and having people getting down to the corrals. It's a pain standing in the corral for a long time, but it's better than being late. So try to be there early and make sure that you read the final race instructions and abide by what times they want you to be there, because they've been doing this for a long time and they know what kind of crowds you'll be dealing with. None of the roads around Epcot, I would say, you asked about the roads around Epcot to avoid. If you just drive into Epcot in a normal manner, you'll be fine.
Well said, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Next question is from Carla Ray, and she says, hello. First off, I can't say enough about the podcast. Being a Disney fan and a novice runner, I have found a missing link to guide me. That's nice. Thanks for producing such an awesome show combining two of my greatest passions. Last year, I tried to run the Princess Half, and I was pulled right outside the Magic Kingdom. I will say I realized I wasn't prepared. I was picked up, and I cried. I've learned so much since then. I've been training very differently. This time I'm following Jeff Galloway's recommended schedule for the Tinkerbell Half Marathon. I'm doing well with the training and I follow it closely. I'm running a 15-minute magic mile. I'd like to get better time. My greatest fear is being picked up again. Have you ever experienced anxiety about not finishing? Do you have any recommendations for me to get over this fear? This is a great question. I know a lot of people, especially running their first races, have this. So, Helen, what do you think?
Well, I mean, the best thing that she can do is to keep up with the training and to follow the schedule and to believe that the training is going to get her to where she needs to be on race day, because that's what it's designed to do. And if you follow through with that, the odds are in your favor that you will be able to deliver on race day if you're delivering on your long runs every week.
Have you ever had the fear that you're not going to finish, Helen?
Oh, my very first half marathon, I was followed by an ambulance for a long part because I was one of the very last runners. So yeah, I have felt that, you know, balloon lady type pressure hanging over my head. But you know what? I finished and there were people behind me. So, you know, you just have to hang in there and believe in yourself that you can do it. And you know, you'll get there.
I agree.
As long as you put the work in, you'll get there.
I agree. The work really, as I said at the beginning of the show, prepares you physically, but mentally too. Matt, what do you think? Have you ever felt like you weren't going to finish?
Oh, all the time. In fact, there's probably never a race that I don't have some anxiety going into it. But the best thing you could do is just keep looking ahead of you. Don't worry about what's behind you. You know, what's behind you, you've already passed. You know, just keep looking forward to the finish line and just keep it in your head that you'll get there and just put everything you have into it and it'll get you there.
What about you, Mike?
Well, I want to add a couple things. Twice I thought I was going to have trouble finishing. The very first half marathon where I broke my ankle, I didn't think I would finish. I didn't know I had a broken ankle. Maybe I wouldn't have finished if I had known. And then there was another race, which I'm trying to remember, another half where I was injured that whole that fall. And I ran in November, and I didn't run again until January. And I think I barely got through. I mean, I finished plenty of time, but it was in the back of my mind. And one of the things I wanted to mention, Carla, is that when you get into your corral, try to get to the front of your corral, even if it's the very last corral. If you get to the front of your corral, that'll give you that much more an advantage and to beat any danger of being swept. And also, just remember that every minute that you run above 15 minutes per mile, 60 minutes per mile, that's when you put in the bank. So you want to do as best as you can early on without forgetting that you need to pace yourself. So try to go as fast as you can early on, but also keep in mind that you need to keep something in the tank. Okay.
Great advice, everybody.
Yeah. Here's a question that I'm going to definitely know who I'm going to call on first. It's from Laura Baker. And Laura Baker says, "Hi, Michelle, an off-topic question, but I know you will know the answer. What are your recommendations for vegetarian entrees? I have a vegetarian 7-year-old, and this time we will be going without the dining plan. What are your favorite vegetarian dishes? Thanks."
So
I don't know.
This is like a WDW Today question.
Yeah, my guess is she's looking for suggestions where she could find the best vegetarian options in Walt Disney World.
So this is a good one for me because I have vegetarian kids too. We're all vegetarian, and my kids are picky eaters. And a while back, I wrote a newsletter for All Ears that has recommendations, so you might want to see if you can find that. But here are some basic things that I did. My kids love breakfast, so I'd make sure that they get a really good breakfast, because I know Laura and I kind of exchange emails back and forth. If you're a vegetarian kid, your options pretty much are macaroni and cheese and pizza at Walt Disney World. There isn't a lot of options on the kids' menu. I would go to buffets like BOMA. Any breakfast buffet is fantastic. I always checked All Ears for the menus, and Touring Plans is a great menu area as well. That's one of the reasons we actually joined Disney Vacation Club, is the ability to have a kitchen and prepare our meals. So if you could have like a, you know, a DVC or get off property, you know, like an all-star vacation club, you could get a chance to make meals and then just bring snacks. So in terms of vegetarian entrees, I don't want to say because everybody's so different. I know my kids, again, are really, really picky eaters, but it requires a little bit of planning. Having said that, in the last 10 years, things have gotten a lot better. There are more options for kids. I would just plan ahead of time before you go. All right, so our next question is from Randy Crane, and I just love this question. It made me laugh out loud when I read it. So he says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I promised a friend I'd wear wings for Tink, and I better get thinking about them soon. Probably, he says I'll probably get them from Sparkle, but being a guy, I'm not really sure I want to run around my neighborhood alone or with my brother-in-law wearing my wings. Now here's the question. I see on the Sparkle website it says to attach the wings using the back of your sports bra. Since obviously I won't be wearing one of those, what is the best way to attach wings when I'm running?" I'm going to open this one up for anybody because I don't know who to ask this question. Who has any idea?
Well, I would say I was thinking about this. Randy, what if you had some kind of a vest that you could wear? Maybe one of those
like a reflective vest?
Yeah, a reflective vest. Maybe you could find a way to attach the wings to that and, you know, maybe do something like that. And I don't know if that means doing something with your running shirt and putting the vest underneath or whatever, but obviously, you know, you need something to do that. Or you could put some kind of a, I don't know, some kind of a strap or something that, you know, make some kind of a harness of or whatever that you could do that.
Helen or Matt?
I can't say I have
you
any.
You could just attach them to a singlet or something. I don't think it would be that complicated.
Okay, Matt?
I can't say I have any experience with this one, but I've heard duct tape fixes everything.
Wow. Ooh, ouch, ouch, ouch. Okay. Not to your skin, but maybe to your singlet, right?
Exactly.
You know, Randy, I this is like Car Talk guys, I want you to report back and tell us how this worked out because I want to hear that you may be helping other people who have the same issue. All right. Matt, Mike, next question?
Next question. Let's see. It comes from, is this a question? It comes from Jennifer Atwater from the great Mississippi Gulf Coast.
I think this is advice for folks.
This is advice. And she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I love the show. I wanted to write with some advice for parents of littles who may find themselves in a situation similar to the one I'm in. I'm a military wife, and I have a 4-year-old daughter whom we homeschool. Our fitness center does not have childcare. Our treadmill is in our garage. Taking Caitlin out in the jogger is not always feasible due to weather or run length. Anyway, this was all fine and dandy when my husband was home, as I could go to the fitness center or run the neighborhood just me and the dog, regardless of the weather, or slip into the garage and run on the treadmill, and there was another adult in the house. However, he deployed in August, and now the weather is cooling down to where it's soon going to be too cold to take Caitlin out in the jogger. Treadmill time, right? Unfortunately, I'm not comfortable being in the garage where I can't hear anything in the house while my daughter is upstairs sleeping, nor is the garage a good place for her to play while I run on the treadmill, and that's when it dawned on me. We should have never gotten rid of our baby monitor. So now with a preschooler, I find myself in the baby section at a discount retailer buying a baby monitor. And last night, for the first time since my husband deployed, I was able to run on our treadmill with peace of mind." So the moral of the story here is don't throw away that baby monitor, I guess, Michelle.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. And I hope your husband returns again very safely very soon. The next question is a very short one, and it is from Brittany Bear Brown, and she says, "Will Disney's Photo Pass include photos taken during a race?" What do you think, guys?
I think the answer is no, although I wish that it did.
Yeah. Matt?
Yeah, I feel it's the same way. I think they have a pretty good deal with Marathon Photo. I don't think that's going to be changing anytime soon.
Yeah, Mike and I have talked about, you know, running with the Magic Band, and wouldn't it be cool if you could use your Magic Band to have that photo taken and just kind of just zap the Magic Band. But Matt, you think that because they work with, is it Marathon Photo? Who is it? Who sends us all these pictures?
I believe it is Marathon Photo. I believe it is.
Yeah. So you don't think that's going to be changing anytime soon, Matt?
No, unfortunately, it doesn't seem that way. Although I agree, I wish that it would. It would be nice to just use the Magic Band for that.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if that's a change we're going to be seeing.
It would make sense because I am a person. I generally go to Disney World as a solo person or with my friends, and I don't buy photo pass, but I would if it included all those Rey's pictures. Mm-hmm. So I imagine a family who might buy photo pass anyway, it would be like a bonus if they could get the Rey's pictures too. I don't know, but it would definitely make me think about buying something I have no interest in otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with you. Michael?
Our next question comes from TJ Fry, who says, Michelle, I do have a question for you for your next Q&A show. I've mentioned in the past that my daughter will be running the half in January. She turns 14 just a few weeks before the race. How do we go about picking up her packet without having a state-issued photo ID? Is her school ID sufficient? Thanks. I don't know if an ID is necessary for anyone under 18 if they're accompanied by their adult, by their parent. Michelle, I don't know.
I would agree. I think you're the parent or guardian, so you would not need a photo ID. Helen and Matt, what do you think?
I have no kids, so I have no answer in this area.
Well, you would need a photo ID for them, I mean. You'd need your own
photo
ID.
I think it makes sense that the adult is signing off on the waiver anyway, not the kid.
Right.
So that's probably why they need to prove that you are agreeing to whatever you're agreeing to when you pick up your stuff. And the parent would be doing that.
You know, I should have looked at the waiver in preparation for this question, TJ, but I bet if we read a waiver, you know, looked at an old waiver, it probably has some information about that. Matt, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the parents have the ability to pick up for the children. I'm just thinking when I did it for my kids for the kids races, we didn't have to show any kind of ID for them. Our ID was sufficient enough.
Okay. Cool.
Michelle?
All right. The next one is from Rick Stiles, and he says, a note of thanks for your great podcast. I'm training for the Dopey in January, and today I did an 8.5-mile walk while listening to your podcast. It was a beautiful day. I felt great, and your podcast got me even more excited for the marathon weekend coming up. I've never run a marathon before, but you energized me to the point where I think I'm ready. I'll test that tomorrow during my 20-mile run. I'm following Jeff Galloway's Dopey training plan using the 30-15 run-walk intervals. It worked for my 17-miler. I hope it continues to work. At age 66, signing up for my first marathon to be run on the day after a half marathon and a 10K and a 5K may not have been the smartest thing, but we all need a challenge in the bling, right? I have a feeling Mike has something to say about this. Michael?
Rick, what you want to do is you want to have a goal of just finishing up right. Don't worry about time. Don't worry about everybody passing you if they do. At the age of 66, you need to make sure that you take care of yourself. And, you say it may not have been the smartest thing, but who's to say, what anyone wants to do? If you felt that you were ready for this at this time, then go for it. Just be very careful on the 5K and the 10K and on the half marathon, and always think about that fourth day. And everybody who's doing the Dopey should be thinking about that fourth day, because that's the most important day. That fourth night is the most important night. So good luck, and we want to hear from you, and it'd be nice if you could show us a picture of your medals when you finish.
I'm curious about what Helen and Matt think about people who are doing their first marathon as part of the Dopey.
Well, I'm amazed that people are both crazy and brave enough to do that. I was petrified to just do a marathon on its own, let alone tackling all four at once. But I will say, the training plans are designed to get people to the finish line. And if he's hanging in there with all the training, and there's no reason to think that he can't hang in there on race weekend either. But God bless you. I don't know that I could do it.
Matt, what do you think?
I think it's fantastic. It is definitely a little bit on the crazy side, but then again, everything with running really is. <it's>, when you think about it.
Yeah, that's very
we're all crazy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that is probably the best medal that somebody can earn for their first marathon and everybody that
the
can
best,
do it.
The best six medals.
Exactly. And that's going to be six that hang with extreme pride for those people.
Matt, are you doing the dopey?
I am, yes. I fell into the trap, and now I'm ready for it.
Yeah. Talk to Helen.
Yeah, no, I'm ready.
No, I know, but you were resisting. You were resisting, but you knew it was futile.
I was resisting, but at least I know what it entails. I know what it's going to be like, I think.
Okay, our next question is from Adam Rossetti, and I'm going to read this. It's actually for you, Michael. And he's asking, I was wondering if Mike would be able to talk about his ACL injury on the show. I tore my ACL and fractured my femur and tibia. I guess tear is an understatement. It's been a year and a half since my surgery. I ran the Disney Marathon in January, but I've been in a lot of pain in the last few months to the point where I had to stop running. And it seems like it's getting worse, and I'm really discouraged. Can Mike talk a little bit about how he coped mentally and physically and the hardships he had making his way back? It would help a lot to hear someone else's story and know that I'm not alone. Thanks, guys. Love your show. And Adam's from Toronto.
Okay. Well, Adam, my injury occurred in October 1981, and my surgeon said to me that I did not actually tear my ACL. The only way he could describe what I did to my ACL is he said I exploded it. So I kind of tore it completely apart. I still have not had it fixed, and I've been dealing with it all these years. I think that what happens is that the injury what it results in is instability in the knee and the joint, and that part of the body, your elbows and your knees, don't get as much blood as the other part, so it's hard to heal real fast there. Now, you said it's been a year and a half since your surgery. And I think what's happening is that maybe you could possibly be running too much. One of the things that you have to be careful about when you are coming back from an injury like that is trying to run too soon. I hurt myself in October, and I tried to start running in March, and I had a very difficult time. For most ACL injuries, and I've been studying this for a long time, it takes about 18 months before you're fully healed. And it's really, really hard to be patient enough so that, you know, your body is fully recovered, because if you don't have that patience, then you might end up doing more damage. My suggestion is to talk to your doctor as much as possible. Make sure that you take note as to exactly what the pain is. And when you say it's getting worse, is it below the knee? Is it above the knee? Is it in the knee? Is it the bone? Is what exactly is bothering you? Sometimes when we injure ourselves, we change the way we do things. We change our running gait, and that might be an issue. And you may need something as simple as an orthotic, or you may need something like injections injections that may help you, but talk to your doctor and let us know what's going on. Michelle?
I don't have anything to add. Luckily, I haven't done that.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's amazing to me that you're running the distance. Yeah. And I want you to do your first marathon. There, I said it. It's public.
Yeah, so. one more thing. I want to tell Adam, when my doctor told me never to run more than 6 miles in any 3-day period. And that was, how long ago was that? 32 years ago, so it can be done. You just have to be patient. Mm-hmm. Okay, the next want me to read the next one, Michelle?
Yeah, this is from somebody who did the Space Coast Marathon, too, a good friend of the show.
Richard Pete. He says, it's my understanding that the term back-to-back refers to races on consecutive weekends or weeks. Two races on consecutive days is called a double. Three consecutive races is triple. four consecutive races is a quadzilla. I think this applies when the races are of the same distance. This is the first I've heard of those terms. But Matt, Helen, have you heard of these terms before?
I think he's speaking marathon maniac ease. Because, yes, I have heard those terms, and that's generally where in that running club's
dictionary. Oh, so back-to-back is different weekends. Interesting.
Yeah, so, yeah, doing back-to-back weekends versus a double, like if you ran a marathon on – a lot of people did a double when they ran Baltimore on Saturday and then the Atlantic City Marathon on Sunday. That would be a double.
So what happens when you do a marathon in the morning and a half marathon at night like Eddie and
See, that Mike. Would confuse them because there's marathon maniacs and half fanatics, and you're mixing apples and oranges there. So it's funny because a marathon does not count for a half fanatic tally. So that, they need to start their own club for that.
Interesting. Helen, before we have you move on, do you want to tell people what that is in case people don't know to what you are referring?
You mean the clubs or the people?
The clubs. And, the clubs.
Yeah. So there are, I guess they're, I don't know. I feel like calling them internet clubs, although they exist in the real world. There is one called Marathon Maniacs. I think it's about 10 years old now, the organization. And if you do differ, they have different levels where they are assign you a planet based upon your level of craziness, basically your maniachood, and you qualify and you can join the club, and then you can level up by doing more and more crazy type marathon things. I'm a member at the lowest level, and I got it from doing two marathons in 16 days. But the titanium level is the highest level, and I think that's like 100 marathons a year. Half Fanatics is a similar kind of club. Which you qualify for, Mike and Michelle, because you both did the Chippendale Relay and the half marathon the day before. So that qualifies you back-to-back halves like that, a double. But, you know, you do a series of things and you can level up to different status within the club. And they have an online presence there at every race.
Yeah, they have gear, too. They swag, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you run a lot and you do a lot of races, it is very tempting to become one of these nuts, the fanatics, because they are very supportive out there for you. I seldom wear my marathon maniac gear, but I did wear it in Atlantic City, and whew, they were all over the place, coming out to, you know, cheer you on and bolster you on and walk with you or run with you, you know, just kind of get through it. So it's a nice organization, although it gets you into dangerous territory.
Cool. Matt, are you a member?
I am a member of Half Fanatics. I just finally joined in September when I did back-to-back halves, but I haven't quite delved into the world of the marathon maniacs just yet.
Hmm. Yeah, well, if you do, you'll be a double agent like me.
That's cool. All right, so our last question is from Paul Goodwin, and he says, Mike, I just listened to a recent podcast where you said you ran the Wicked Half Marathon. That was in Salem. And as a WDW Today and a Mickey Miles listener from the start and current Wicked Running Club member, it would be great to run into you at a race. I will unfortunately not be back to Disney in the near future, so I was wondering if you had plans to run anything on the North Shore of Massachusetts, for those of you who aren't familiar with that, what that means, or Southern New Hampshire.
Well, Paul, I mean, I'd like to get back to the Wicked Half because I believe that was a PR for me. I don't know if it was a PR for you.
That was my PR. Yeah, that was my PR for a half.
Yeah, it's for Helen and Matt. It's running in Salem, Mass, and you run through
Marblehead
as well, and you run along the seashore. You run along lighthouses and everything, and it's kind of funny because you think that it's flat, and then you go up and down hills, and then you come back.
For those of you who want to know what Marblehead looks like, watch the movie Grown Ups 2 because it was filmed in Marblehead. It's a great half marathon.
So anyways, Paul, I'd like to get back there and do it. And actually, there's the Manchester, New Hampshire half and full marathon that is sponsored by my daughter's company, and she's actually on the planning team for that. And she's always asking me to run run that. And I always thought, oh, I don't know if I want to run a half marathon in November. But these days, everybody's running crazy miles in November and December. Like my co-host is running 24 miles in December, and she hates the cold. So that might be something. And, of course, if there's any races that Michelle and I sign up for that are beyond Disney, we'll let everybody know in case people want to stop by and chat.
We usually put it on our Facebook page. But I am running one in April on Patriots Day. If you want to come out and cheer, Paul, it's called the Boston Marathon. So I hope you're going to be there, Mike, cheering for me.
Of course.
We can convince Helen and Matt to come too. Matt's in Connecticut. He should be here.
Absolutely.
And I think we are out of questions, and we want to thank Helen and Matt for helping us deal with these questions, because sometimes we're not sure of the answers, and it's always good to have as many people as possible. So Helen and Matt, thank you, and I would like to have you come on again sometime.
Great. It was nice to be here. It's always a lot of fun to be on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Matt, tell us one more time how people can join your Facebook page, because it's a fantastic supportive community.
They can check us out on Facebook by doing a search for Team Hashtag Run Disney, or they can go directly to TeamRunDisney.com, and there's links there that will take them right to the group.
And you have a Twitter presence too, right?
That's correct.
And you also have Instagram.
We're all over here. It's at Team Run Disney on both sites.
And it's a great group. Alrighty.
Okay, so for Helen Dunn, Matt Marcella, Michelle Scribner-McLean, and me, Mike Scopa, we'll see you on the road. This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And again, it's the holiday season. Think about maybe giving yourself a gift and planning a Disney vacation. And again, Santa's helpers are waiting for you at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They'll do the best job they can, and anyone can, to help you get the best vacation experience ever. So visit them at mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.